So please turn back with me to Psalm 10, which we read together. David Meredith was speaking at the Aberystwyth Conference, and at the beginning of one of his messages, he reminded us that as evangelicals, we were often not too different from High Church of England, Roman Catholics, in terms of rituals. Right. He was, of course, pointing out that not necessarily good rituals that were kept. But actually, in our house, there's a little ritual, right, which I'm going to share with you. And that is every morning when we get up we try now to have breakfast in bed. Ooh, sorry about that. As we get breakfast, I always pull back the curtains. We have vertical blinds behind the curtains, by the way, just in case you're panicking. Right? We pull back the curtains. And I always look behind the blind just to see what sort of day it is. The thing is less for you to remember our little ritual, or my little ritual, more to reflect upon the fact that how greatly the day that is outside there, if you like, the circumstances that are out there, influences us. Right? If it's that lovely, sunny, balmy, well, you get one or two of them, don't you? Summer morning, right? You know, you're buoyed up and you think, this is a great day, let's get up, get on with it, right? But if it's one of those days when it's, can I use this expression? It's a good Scottish Ulster one, dreich, right? In other words, you'll be familiar with dreich, right? You know, in other words, it's miserly rain, it's miserable, it's the sort of rain as soon as you go out, you get saturated with it, you know, and it's dull. And you say, But the point of starting with that illustration is to say how much we are influenced by our circumstances and how easily those changing circumstances can change us. Now, Psalm 9 and Psalm 10 are two psalms that are coupled together. We know that because if we look at the structure of them, then there is a wonderfully intricate structure in the Hebrew, because each of the verses, it begins with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which then goes consecutively through the alphabet. So if you look at Psalm 9, the first letter of the word that begins each of the verses, that is the verses in Hebrew of the song, right? The first letter goes from Aleph, the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet, and in the last verse, verse 20 of Psalm 9, it begins with Kaf, right? But then in Psalm 10, it carries on. So you just don't go A to K, you then go Lamed through to the final letter in the Hebrew alphabet, which is Tov, right? So L to T, essentially. So we know that the two psalms were written essentially to flow into one another in a sequence through this acrostic with the beginning. But what you do find, and I think is the reason between the people who compiled the psalm book, dividing them into two psalms, is essentially it's David writing Psalm 9 with full of confidence in what God has done for him, and praising God for him, for the victory that he has had over his enemies. Sing praises to the Lord, he says in verse 11. Declare his deeds among the people. We saw a little bit of a wobble in verse 13 in terms of his confidence. But then he comes to the end of the psalm with full confidence. Verse 19, arise, O Lord, do not let man prevail, let the nations be judged in your sight. Put them in fear, O Lord, that the nations may know themselves to be but men. The sunny day psalm. confidence in God. And then Psalm 10 is the Drich day. Something's happened. Right? The circumstances have changed. And look how Psalm 10 begins. Why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide in times of trouble? And then he gives this list of how the wicked are prospering. And it seems to David that God has taken himself off, or he's in a corner with his hands over his ears and his eyes closed, and he's determined not to listen to his prayer and not to pay heed to what is going on. And what has changed? Has God changed? Well, we find out that David recognizes in this psalm that God hasn't changed. And that's the message for us. That in spite of changing circumstances, in spite of what we think, in spite of what we might even think that God is thinking or doing, God doesn't change. And we could basically stop the message there. Because that's the key message in this psalm. But we're not going to stop there. We're going to look a little bit more at Psalm 10. We're going to look at it with two main points, with a few sub-points attached. We're going to look at, first of all, David's challenged faith in God. We're going to look at that in verses 1 to 11. And then we're going to look at David's comforted faith in God. How quickly the sunshine of God's blessing is all too often replaced with dark clouds of despair and gloom. I think if I just look round the room this evening, I'm sure that's true in your life. If you're a believer, if you're a Christian, how often we enjoy the sunshine of God's blessing, but when those dark clouds come, we are the ones who are led into despair and gloom. Let's think in David's terms here. After all, he has just prayed those words in verse 19 and 20 of Psalm 9. He's been praying that God would judge the nations for their wickedness. He's asked God not to let man prevail in the situation that he sees around him. But now this wave of despair rolls in upon him. It seems to engulf him. It causes him to challenge God for what appears to be his inaction in this situation. Now, we don't know what the situation is. But I think that's good that we don't know, because it helps us to apply it in a much more generic sense to each one of us. And though David's approach here may at first seem really very direct, maybe it's too edgy for you, maybe just too sharp, maybe you're saying to yourself, "Oh, David, you know, why would you challenge God like this? This isn't good." But I'd like us just to consider that this challenge that he issues in the opening verse here, these two questions, right, it is not a challenge of someone who is a real doubter in God. It's someone who is looking to God to reassure him in his doubt. And he's not afraid to voice his personal feelings to God. He knows, as we know, that God knows our feelings already. How often I am guilty of this, that I even pray in my individual prayers, but it's easier to do it obviously if you're praying collectively, but I even pray in my individual prayers with a pietistic approach that says, "Oh, I mustn't say that to God, I've got to do it this way." Right? Come on, do you recognize that in your own prayers? How you feel to remember that God knows all about you. He knows what you're thinking. And he knows what maybe you're not voicing, but you're saying inwardly. And he doesn't want us to hide our concerns or our anxieties or our doubts behind a sort of piety that pretends that all is okay. David's never guilty of that. That's why the Psalms are so encouraging, aren't they? They're so encouraging because, as we would say in today's language, he just tells it like it is. And he comes to God and he tells it like it is. But please note that he's not coming with a doubt that is, if you like, an atheistic doubt. He's coming with what I think last week was described as good doubts rather than bad doubts. In other words, doubts that are looking to God to reassure and to help. And I think that's what this psalm helps us with. And we can see it even in his approach. A couple of things here just to note. He comes to God and asks why. He doesn't go to the learned people in the country. He doesn't go to the great philosophers of his day. He only goes to one place with his doubt. He goes to God and he asks why. And really there's an application there immediately, isn't there? Why do we go anywhere else than to God when we have a problem? When we have a doubt? When we have a concern? If that concern is about, has God heard? Has God dealt with us in the way that we want us to? That is where our loving Heavenly Father wants us to come, directly to him. And do you note that even though he is asking these questions, he still pleads with God for his situation. After asking these two questions in verse 2, he says, "Let them be caught," these are the wicked, "in the plots which they have devised." Now, if he is a real doubter, right, why would he ever ask God, in whom he doubts, right, to help him in this situation? If he really was a doubter, then he wouldn't be anywhere near asking God for help. It's not the sort of impersonal attack that we hear people who have no time for God make. You know, the sort of person that says, "Oh, if there's a God, then he should do this and he should do that." No, David wants to be reassured that the God that he knows, the God that he seeks to serve, that he seeks to love, is there and has not changed. And then the third thing is just that in addressing God, may seem like a little thing, but he comes to a personal God, doesn't he? "Why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide in times of trouble?" Here is one who David knew intimately. He knew him well. He knew him so well that he was not afraid to come boldly before him, because he knew the God to whom he came. So how do you respond when you feel that God has, if you like, brought this day of cloud and despair upon you? If you feel that God has not acted properly in responding to your petitions, to your prayers, do you become downcast? Do you become withdrawn? Do you doubt God? Well, learn to do what David does. Remember who God is. Remember what God has done for you. Remember how he has acted in love towards all of his people, down through history, that he has not